From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. And I mean latest. The latest moments is the running mate for Kamala Harris will be the governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz. Do you believe this? He was a finalist, came out of nowhere. They heard he was a finalist. I always thought it was going to be Mark Kelly a week ago. Said, how can he go wrong? He's Arizona, battleground state. He's got the military background. The guy was an astronaut. His wife was shot, Gabby Giffords. Was shot, so he had gun control, and he had speak authentically about that. And then I said, well, he's eliminated. That's interesting, but that means it's going to be Governor Shapiro. Governor Shapiro, battleground state, 60% approval rating in that state, won handily in a state that he must have. He feels very comfortable on his feet, and we find out Governor Shapiro was somebody who was mentored by a man named Barack Obama, who also mentored Kamala Harris. So I thought, that's a layup. Then Tim Walz continued to come. He was very affable, very comfortable in front of the camera, very entertaining. Joe Biden evidently thinks he's hysterical. The only problem is, oh, he's extremely left-wing. Bernie Sanders really exactly loves him. The unions love him. And you might say, well, he's a Democrat. What's the big deal? Well, I always thought if you're Kamala Harris coming from left wing, the left coast, and you're to the left of most on the left coast in San Francisco as a DA, an AG through the California, then a senator from California. You want to get to that moderate vote. That's why Joe Biden picked you to have a next generation, to have a woman, and I guess appease the left wing that thought he was too moderate. He or she's someone who's left wing, who put someone who's left wing. And I think they're cheering and in Trump land. No doubt about it. So Tim Walz is in. He'll be good on his feet. He's going to try to deliver. He's kind of going to try to deliver Ohio and Pennsylvania and Minnesota. And he's going to try to deliver some of those Rust Belt states. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. And J.D. Vance, I think even though Tim Walz can speak, obviously comfortable, six-term congressman, I get it. He was supposed to be a moderate. He didn't turn out to be a moderate. Meanwhile, we'll bring you the latest on that and get you some instant analysis. But for now, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
A lot of business people surrounding Harris. If you're in the stock market, if you care about your paycheck, you go with Trump. If that's what you do.
You do?
Yeah, well, he wants to cut your taxes.
Oh, he wants to cut taxes.
Your taxes.
Yeah, that was Jim Cramer. Couldn't kill his microphone, even though he was on CNBC. Praying for a rebound. World markets rattle and the Biden administration stays silent. Is the recession looming? A rate cut next? What do you think? Can anyone speak up or do anything as we have to? Do we have to wait for an election in November?
Number two.
It is a perilous time. It's a perilous time not only for people who are living in Israel or the broader Middle East, but for all of us. I think we are all at a heightened risk and we are at a very perilous moment in American history and, frankly, history for Europe and the world.
Middle East about to explode as Iran and their proxies load up to attack Israel. They already attacked us. The IDF takes out another Hamas leader and another Hezbollah commander. They're not slowing down. Good luck.
Number one.
Vice President Kamala Harris has picked Minnesota Governor Tim Walz to be her running mate.
Wow, campaign. Is this the honeymoon coming to a close for Kamala Harris? As she has now made a choice for her running mate, the question about where she stands as compared to where she stood is coming up left and right. At one point, she's got to declare what she means, how she'd govern, what she would do, because all we have is what she's done and what she's said. And if I look on her platform, now that Tim Walz is there, when I look at her platform, guess what? I see nothing except for donate and you could buy some campaign action wear. Bottom of the hour, we talk about the exploding Middle East with General Jack Keane and everything else. By the way, our Ukraine is making some moves. There's one thing, the one story that comes to mind. I don't know if you've seen it, Allison. Out of nowhere, this genius guy on the Talk in New York, which is especially I do in the morning, in 2020, this guy came up. His name, and he's done this once before. This guy came up with this decided to get a patent out for a website for Harris Waltz for president. And he's got the domain name. And if you want the domain name, which I'm sure they want, he's going to want $15,000. He spent $8,000 on it. How he thought that this could be a ticket is astounding. We got to book this guy. He's from Brooklyn, so he has got it. So, I mean, they have to be cheering. As comfortable as this guy is, and I guess he's funny, this is not the person that you want to make people feel better about who are independents, undecideds, or moderates. To me, it's insane. So it really is insane. And also, to a degree, it's going to make you wonder, are Democrats that wary about having a Jewish person on the ticket that they didn't want to take the risk of losing Michigan or those young people that are protesting Israel on college campuses around the country and promise to put all those protests we saw, they're going to be more imaginative, more disruptive, and more invigorated in the fall than they were when we left in the spring? And are they that worried about the youth vote as well as the pro-Israeli vote, which you would have gotten, the anti-Israeli vote, which you would have got? He's for a two-state solution, doesn't like Netanyahu, but is firmly in Israel's court. He wrote in high school, Shapiro, that he doesn't think they could ever live with the Palestinians, Israelis could ever live side by side. So we'll talk about that in great detail as this breaking news has just happened. One thing is clear. J.D. Vance will deliver remarks in Philadelphia today. And Kamala Harris at 5:30 today will appear in a campaign rally in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We'll take it on the network. Trump does not have anything planned pretty much all week until Friday night. So we'll see. So I thought this was interesting. The AP, Michelle Price writes for the AP. And she warned yesterday during a panel discussion on CNN that the hype around the vice president's candidacy might be coming down to earth after the U.S. stock market plunged big time. Do you think people are caring about little political fights when they see where the economy's going? They don't. Almost on every poll you see, the number one issue is the economy. And every poll that you also see is Trump's in double digits over Kamala Harris on the economy. She was on to say they just a little bit ago this morning posted the brat theme meme with the stock market is tanking. Price said during a panel discussion, noting that the Trump campaign was using Kamala Harris's memes to mock her now, that everything that has been in the honeymoon period might seem kind of silly compared to when people are looking at their 401ks, when they're going to start looking at gas prices, or when they're looking at what it costs at the grocery store, the type of things are not coming back down to earth. We might be entering the phase where the Trump campaign has been waiting for. And look, I think the Trump campaign's been waiting for it, but I also know they know they're going to get momentum off the vice presidential pick, and then they're going to get the RNC. The DNC. And that's going to be momentum. And I think when things like that happen, you just have to hold on. If you're a Republican, and think to yourself, where are the openings? Where are the openings for me to speak up and act out? What else can I tell you? We can also talk about where the economy is going right now. And the economy, or the big picture, is really tenuous. If you're looking at where people are heading and what they're doing, the former president of the United States taking advantage of this, calling this the Kamala collapse. Jim Cramer on CNBC was asked about what would be better for business, for the average American. What administration? Cut 30.
A lot of business people surrounding Harris. If you're in the stock market, if you care about your paycheck, you go with Trump. If that's what you do.
You do?
Yeah, well, he wants to cut your taxes.
Well, he wants to cut taxes.
Your taxes.
Yeah. So, you hear that? You do? That's not why we booked you. No, it's his show. A little bit more from this. This is Tiana Lowe Doshier with Jim Cramer not being wrong. She weighed in, too. She's on FNN. Let's listen. Cut 31.
He's not wrong at all. Look, inflation-adjusted returns in the stock market, it's not even – there's no contest between Trump's record for 4 years and the Biden-Harris record of 3.5 years in terms of real returns. Look, we still have, 5% loss of average weekly wages from the start of this presidency until now. And as Kamala Harris has emphasized, she's been the last person in the room for every major decision, including Afghanistan. And that's why the media is covering for her, not wanting to do a debate. The last time Donald Trump debated the Democratic presidential nominee de facto, he ended his career. So Kamala Harris knows she just has to make it a couple more weeks until early voting starts, hope that the rest of the progressive corporate media covers for her, and that she's never actually questioned.
That's an interesting stat. She's never actually questioned, but I think that anybody in the press, I mean, there's got to be some people in the press that don't work for Fox and that they just want to say to themselves, I got to sit down for an interview. I don't even know how to write a story about her. I don't know where she stands. I heard through an anonymous campaign worker that she's flipped on about 12 major issues and she'd be somewhat of a moderate leader. But in terms of what she's done as a senator, the questions that she asked of these nominees, how she blistered Kavanaugh, as you see her with, as a DA and as a district attorney, as well as a as an attorney general. There's nothing about her that screams moderate. Here's Lindsey Graham, cut 32.
Well, the worst is yet to come, unfortunately. Well, they're reaping what they've sown for the last 4 years on the inflation side. Supply and demand, Kamala. If you restrict American oil and gas drilling offshore and onshore, you do away with the Keystone Pipeline, you produce less oil and gas, you're going to have higher prices. When you overregulate the economy, it's hard to create jobs. When you flood the economy from Washington with money, that doesn't create jobs, you create inflation. So what's happening in the Mideast is when we withdrew from Afghanistan, it sent every jihadist, radical Islamic terrorist on steroids. Then we gave the Ayatollah $80 billion of money and oil by relieving sanctions. So those two things have led to an empowered Iran who is wreaking havoc on the Mideast. At home, the broken border in inflation and spending policies have come home to roost. In August of last year, Schumer said the Inflation Reduction Act would show up and help us all this summer. Well, it didn't.
So there's a couple of things going on here. We have the border. Yesterday's story that 99 people from the FBI watch list were caught at the border. Do you know what happened to them? They were let go inside the country. In fact, a 29-year-old Colombian gangster was caught after originally being let go. ICE tracked him down and managed to arrest him in Maryland. So that is just the latest example of people getting showing up on the list, and they let him go anyway, and they give him a court appearance to show up. Listen, if you're on the terror watch list, you're not coming in. How hard is that? Blows me away. Listen, I'll take a timeout and come back. The big news, of course, Josh Shapiro is not the running mate of Kamala Harris, which is great news for the Trump campaign. Tim Walz is. He presided over the George Floyd civil unrest. Remember that? He helped surrogate campaigns in the Midwest states and was successful. He had six terms in the House, endorsed by Senator Sanders, loved by Speaker Pelosi, and the United Auto Workers Union. Good luck, guys.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is about making sure you take away this perceived power he has. And in most cases with bullies, he doesn't have that. He doesn't scare Vice President Harris, but he opens up this idea that your previous guests were asking about, where's the plan? He doesn't have one, and these weird ideas, and I'll stay to that. I still say this. People can feel this. Why does a guy never laugh? Like, laugh with people, but laughing at people.
So Tim Walz doesn't like that President Trump doesn't laugh enough. So that got him the vice presidency, the vice presidential nomination with the current vice president, Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota. I have a better question. In 2020, why didn't he do anything to stop the riots? And Donald Trump put this out recently, not knowing that Walz was a finalist, but wasn't picked yet. But now he's picked. Every voter in Minnesota needs to know that when the violent mobs of anarchists and looters and Marxists came to burn down Minneapolis 4 years ago, remember, I couldn't get your governor to act. He's supposed to call the National Guard or the Army, and he didn't do it. I couldn't get your governor, so I sent in the National Guard to save Minneapolis. Several fact-check outfits have labeled that false. Some commentators have gone beyond that to defend Walz handling the National Guard, arguing that it was he who deactivated it. But as a closer look, as the record shows, that is a very partial version of the events. That's a very partisan version of the events. So the George Floyd riots, what he did, allowing that police station to be overrun, not saying anything, a lot of his socialist beliefs. He gave school lunches, not just to impoverished kids, to every kid. Why would you use taxpayer dollars to give school lunches to kids who have enough money to get lunch at school or make it at home? That's just not a good use of taxpayer money. He also is against vouchers. So you're going to just find this is what they're comfortable with. They believe two progressives on a ticket will get them elected. I think this is a huge gift to President Trump and the Trump campaign. Let's see if they can take advantage of it. Let's see if they're ready to go with the opposition research. And by the way, Chris LaCivita was right last night. He's running the Trump campaign, co-chairman of the Trump campaign. Chris LaCivita came out and said, word is Shapiro is out. It's going to be Walz. And it was. Now, it just brings back this comment from James Carville. This is what he said. Cut 13.
Understand this, and I'm going to say this as clearly as I can. Anybody that has ever listened to anything that the progressive left has ever said has lived to profoundly regret it. I'm literally on every issue, they're dead ass wrong. These people are not just wrong, they're literally walking catastrophes. And the fastest people realize that, the better off they're going to be. I wish she'd tell them all to go f*** themselves.
But instead, she picked one. And he said, but it's time for us to embrace our progressive roots and our progressive values. Those are the quotes that he has. That's what he's going to be like, unless he's going to change too. So if Trump can get a little bit, get that discipline back, stop talking about anything except for the economy, immigration, talk about foreign policy, how you'd be different, standing up for Israel. All you do is back up the things you've done and say things that are innovative. Like, for example, we're going to get a great missile shield that's going to protect this country. Man, would I love that. Then you give it to our allies. That's the type of thing the American people can rally around. I'm telling you, work an extra day to get it. When you got Rocket Man over there in North Korea moving what could be nuclear missiles to the border of the 38th parallel in South Korea yesterday, you see that Russia and China is building an unparalleled nuclear arsenal. Imagine if we just had a shield ready to go. That's great. He also said we're not going to tax Social Security. That'll give them an instant break if they have a fixed income and with inflation just ruining their lives. And then you have no tax on tips. That's going to help a lot of the workers who are in the tip industry, hospitality. And at which time you don't have to declare it, that will definitely affect it, especially because people in that business, a lot of times you want to ascend to be in management if you want to stick around, or you're looking to supplement your income, or you're looking to get your career on track. Really helpful. Rather than forgiving a loan they signed on for, you just say, hey, you know those tips you earned? A little less taxes. So there are some innovative things out there going on. But in case you do not know, it's going to be Tim Walz running with Kamala Harris. They're going to be in Pennsylvania tonight. By the way, so will J.D. Vance. He's going to follow this new ticket all around the country. Don't move. General Jack Keane is next.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The Biden-Harris administration has criminally, practically, been withholding arms and munitions resupply to Israel at a time when they are facing a seven-front existential war. There's no excuse for it. And, Trace, you know, I can't help but contrast where we are today with where we were at the end of the Trump administration. Biden-Harris, they inherited a Middle East that was peaceful and prosperous under President Trump, and they have appeased the Iranian regime from day one, and here we are today.
Eli Cohen, who's a former State Department official, talking about the state of the Middle East, which is like a ticking time bomb at this hour, as Iran has pledged to retaliate and not worry about an escalating war. We know that our troops got hit in Iraq, and we do have a number of injuries. No idea how serious they are, but the fact is they're being shelled, and we have not answered that at all. General Jack Keane with us now, retired four-star general, the chairman of the study of the Institute of War, Fox News senior strategic analyst. General, we're at a very tenuous time in the Middle East. What's your greatest concern when you talk about Iran being dead set on retribution?
Well, I do think the Iranians are going to be challenged trying to achieve their objectives. For a couple of reasons. One, the last operation that they conducted was fundamentally flawed. I mean, they began the operation with 170 drones, which provided early warning to our Arab friends that are very near Iran. Their sensors radars notified the U.S.-led coalition that hundreds of drones were in the air. That provided the United States, Britain, France, and Jordan to have their fighters in place to intercept those 170 drones. Secondly, it provided early warning, certainly to the fact that a missile attack would likely follow. Cruise missiles, 30 of them followed, obviously at a much greater speed than the drones. And then finally, 120 ballistic missiles followed at the last, moving much faster than cruise missile systems. And that enabled everyone to be set and ready. The Navy ships, the three Israeli air defense systems, Iron Dome, which we see a lot of, short-range defense, David Sling, mid-range defense, and Arrow, ballistic missile defense, all ready to go. The Iranians have got to think through that. Is there a way that they would be able to do something at which would be a shorter response time for the coalition and Israel? The second thing that they have to deal with is something I pointed out to our audience repeatedly. The Iranian conventional military forces are not what they're advertised. The Navy is weak in terms of the number of ships, the types of ships, the air power. They're still flying mostly the airplanes that they got from the United States going way back into the 70s. And early 80s, and their ground power, while it has a significant number of forces, not particularly well-trained and not well-equipped. Where they have put their money is in their rocket and missile forces, and they had 50% on average malfunction of those cruise missiles and ballistic missiles. So they've got to fix those problems if they intend to have some effect. I suspect, Brian, they will bring in Hezbollah at a minimum, who also has long-range missiles, accurate and quite lethal, much greater than what they've been using in terms of the rockets to fire into northern Israel. They don't really need anything greater than that because of the range. And then they have the decision, do they bring in the Houthis as well, that do have some capability here to range Israel? And the Shia militias that operate in Iraq and Syria, they have begun to attack the United States forces again. They may be part of this as well. So those are the things the Iranians have to do. One, fix the previous problems, and two, how far do they expand in terms of the other proxies and the coordination problems that brings along with it.
Don't they have assets in Syria too? Couldn't they go from there? So they can go from Syria, they can go from southern, they can go from Lebanon. And I don't know what's left of Gaza, what kind of rockets they have in Gaza, as well as a hit from another side. Do you think that's something they're game planning against, the Israelis?
Well, I think Hezbollah is likely. I mean, the Israelis have conducted, you know, in the last couple of years, close to 300 airstrikes into Syria to make certain to destroy as much of the transshipment of missiles that go across Iraq, across Syria, into Lebanon. But two, to prevent them from establishing missile bases, something that the Iranians always wanted to do in Syria. So that would be minimal, you know, coming out of Syria. But coming out of Lebanon, that would be significant. So our audience understands 130,000 plus rockets and missiles in the Hezbollah arsenal. They can range any town, any city in Israel. So we could see something, if it comes from multiple directions like you're suggesting, that would really challenge the three air defense systems that Israel has. However, being assisted by naval ships that have anti-missile air defense systems capabilities on those ships as well, that would add to the fight.
So we understand the Iranian retaliation. They said they listed a list of potential civilian and military targets. Why would they do that? What's the mindset there? To terrorize, to show how bold they are?
Yeah, well, I think we at ISW, you know, we kicked that around. We think they listed this in one of their state media things, you know, that so our audience understands the Ministry of Defense, the Knesset, the parliament. They listed a number of air bases, you know, throughout Israel. And I think two reasons here. One, to alarm the citizens of Israel. Remember the objective that the Iranians and the proxies have, and obviously led by Hamas, is they want to make the security situation in Israel so tenuous that people don't want to live there anymore. And the first to go would be people who have options. They're wealthy to go live someplace else. That's what the mindset is here. So what they're doing here, one, is to introduce fear that everything is going to be at risk. Everything that you care about is going to be at risk if we're going to take down the Israeli parliament and Israeli air bases. Secondly, I think they would love for Israel to divert resources, fixed resources to those sites to be able to protect them, which would open up other possibilities for the Iranians. Listen, the Iranians, they know they have to do something that's measured here. They do not want a war with Israel and the United States. They lose in that for the reasons I stated. Weak conventional forces. They have never wanted a war with the United States or Israel. They developed the proxy system, which is a brilliant strategy, and certainly caught the Reagan administration like a deer in the headlights when they blew up our barracks, killed 240-plus Marines, blew up our embassy and its annex in Lebanon, blew up our embassy in Kuwait, all in the same year, and we did nothing. Actually, we pulled our troops out. You can argue whether they should have been there in the first place. But nonetheless, that was like, as I said, no one had seen this before. Proxies in another country fighting on behalf of a nation state someplace else. And we just thought of it as terrorism and didn't understand that this was absolutely very well organized by Iran. Eventually, Reagan team figured it out and went after the Iranians in the late 80s and took down much of their navy when they were trying to interfere with the flow of oil out of the Persian Gulf. So they rely on their proxies. I still come back strategically. That is really where they are. They don't want to fight in their homeland. They know the people are opposed to them. One of the reasons why the Israel espionage operations killing people and destroying infrastructure is so successful in Iran is because they have resistance group helping the Mossad. And that's the reality of it. And certainly Iranians are very, very much understanding of that.
So Mohsen Hassan Youssef, whose dad was one of the founders of Hamas, you know, is now living here. He was imprisoned. He got caught. He was in prison. And somewhere along the line, I've met him a few times. He switched, and he says, you have to understand how evil Hamas is. He also says they were in denial about this. Cut 25.
After October 7 and this hesitant policy towards the Middle East, which basically we see Iran about to obtain a nuclear weapon, and they already have ballistic missiles. They have been destabilizing the region through their proxies, but also they can reach Europe. They can reach all the American interest in the Middle East. And we hide our head in the sand and we let them go. They are not that far from achieving a nuclear bomb. We want to give Ayatollah a mass destruction weapon and we're watching it. We see his nuclear program and we are in total denial. Well, this is madness.
And I feel the same way. I think you feel the frustration, too, because they said they're weeks away. And the Secretary of State just says as a throwaway line, everything changes if they have a nuclear weapon because they're the maniacs that would use it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, many people believe right from the outset that if Saddam Hussein was able to develop the nuclear weapon that he was pursuing, and remember the Israelis knocked that system down in an airstrike, there never would have been an invasion. It would have been a checkmate because he's got a nuclear weapon. Nuclear weapons, look at North Korea. Why does he want that nuclear weapon? Preservation of the regime. That's what Saddam Hussein was in pursuit of. Gaddafi was in pursuit of it in Libya at one point. But after the invasion of 2003 in Iraq, he gave it all up because he figured he would be next in terms of an invasion force. So, yes, I mean, it's insanity. I mean, your guest is absolutely right. Listen, just weeks ago, the Biden administration was in secret negotiations with the Iranians trying to return to the nuclear deal. And the Iranians got to be just laughing at them. At the same time, you know, they're weeks away from having enough highly enriched uranium to make a weapon. To be able to deliver one would still take several months to be able to do that. But make no mistake, the United States and Israel are going to have to do something about this. I suspect the Israelis, having delayed the nuclear program for 9 months as a result of two major explosions that took place at the Natanz nuclear power plant. They blew up their centrifuges, also with the assistance of Iranian resistance groups. They will likely attempt espionage first before they conduct a major airstrike.
Yeah, we're talking to General Jack Keane about what could be, it's a tinderbox right now in the Middle East. Two Katyusha rockets hit our troops. Two Katyusha rockets were fired towards our base in Iraq, the El Asad air base. It looks like a couple of guys have been hit, maybe more. What should we be doing in response?
Well, I have said from the outset, if you want to stop the Houthis from firing missiles at merchant ships and shutting down the Suez Canal, you got to get out of defense and you got to go on offense. And it's not enough just to hit some of the launchers in Yemen. You've got to take out the Iranian Navy. You got to take down their spy ship that's in the Red Sea that's doing all the targeting for the Houthis. It's sitting there. And it's absurdity. The target list that General Kurilla, who's the central command commander for our audience, he commands all the U.S. forces in the region. He's made repeated recommendations to the administration to attack Iran's capabilities to shut them down. That's been rejected. The same thing when they attack our air bases, at ground base and air base, in Iraq, where our troops are, or in Syria, we should take that fight to Iran and destroy some of their IRGC capabilities that are supporting those militia groups. That's what gets Iran's attention. Iran doesn't care how many Iraqi and Syria Shia militia we kill. They don't care how many Houthis we kill, how many launch systems they kill. They know there'll be more radicalized people to take their place, and they'll replace the launchers and they'll replace the missiles. Iran does care about their own resources inside their country and the vulnerability it shows to their own people. And they fear their people significantly, much like President Xi feels his own people rather significantly, because they know it's a tinderbox in terms of the people taken to the streets to overthrow the regime. So, yes, our strategy, Brian, has been misguided here from the beginning of this administration in easing up on the sanctions and Iran's flush with money and doing nothing to hold them accountable for operationalizing all these proxies to help destroy the state of Israel and drive us out of the region. And we haven't laid a glove on them, you know, as a result of that. And they sit back and look at this, and they know it's predictable. Biden will do nothing. That's Biden will stay on defense, but he's not going to go on offense. That's what they conclude. And tragically, that's going to continue.
Well, yeah, if they keep targeting our guys, he's going to be forced to do something, I imagine. Real quick, with Ukraine, we have only a minute left, but starting to do some real damage on Ukraine, on Russia's Navy. Just blew up a submarine, right?
Yes. I mean, the Russian Navy has been pushed out of the Black Sea as an operational force. This is quite remarkable. Think of this. Russia has one of the most powerful navies in the world. Certainly, China is number one. We're number two, and Russia's right behind it, number three. And Ukraine does not have a navy, but yet they've driven their navy, the Russian navy, out of the Black Sea, and they've done it with their imagination. They've done it with air drones and sea drones largely to do that. And it's remarkable, the ingenuity and also the boldness that they have displayed in accomplishing. And as a result of it, the wheat and multigrain export is flowing out of Odessa, out to open markets around the world and helping the Ukrainian economy.
Yeah, Putin wanted to lock that down, and he got blown away. Everybody wants you today, General Keane, but you answered our show's call. We appreciate it.
Always will do, Brian.
Thanks so
Love
much.
Talking to you and your audience.
That's a big compliment. Thank you very much. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Tim Walz is wonderful. And she had many good choices among the six and certainly among the two. I'm a big fan of Governor Shapiro. Tim Walz, I know very well. He served in the House. To characterize him as left is so unreal. It's just not what the question is. He's right down the middle. He's a heartland of America Democrat.
Yeah, don't ask him. I think he's a left-wing socialist. Proud of it. Pro-sanctuary city. Pro giving everybody everything. Also, he's a free healthcare guy. He's a free college guy, free lunch guy. So I don't know where this money comes from, but if you're looking to balance out the ticket, you didn't do it, Tim Walz. What you got is a guy who seems to have a good personality, be affable, comfortable on his feet, comfortable in his own skin. But man, is America comfortable in his policies? The people that matter, independents, undecideds, moderates, they can't be pleased with this. And why do you walk away from Governor Shapiro in Pennsylvania with a 62% approval rating in a state you must have? He's worried that he's Jewish. No doubt about it. Get used to that.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Excited to be here. Thanks so much for you being here and letting this show grow the way it's growing all year long. It's probably one of our best years ever. Also, you can listen every day. If you have to run from your local affiliate, you can always listen on the app. Go watch or listen on the Fox News app. You can. We have the screener, so we're always streaming. And you go to watch on the bottom. You just push over. You got the news channel. You got the business channel, and then you'll just come up to radio. And radio's visual too. You get to see what's happening in the studio. Plus, you got the podcast at any time. This hour, we're going to be joined by Alan West. We'll do a simulcast with Varney and Company. The economy matters so much today, and we got a special interview with Mike Rogers, whose primary is today. And before we get to him, let's get to the big news. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
A lot of business people surrounding Harris. If you're in the stock market, if you care about your paycheck, you go with Trump. If that's what you do.
You do?
Yeah, well, he wants to cut your taxes.
Oh, he wants to cut taxes.
Your taxes.
See how shocked they were on CNBC that they go, yeah, go with Trump if you want to be better economically. That's what most of the country thinks. Praying for a rebound. World markets rattle and Biden administration stays silent. In a recession, is a recession looming, I ask. A rate cut next. What about you? Can anyone speak up or tell us the direction of what they predict, what they hope, or what they're doing at the White House? Is anybody working there?
Number two.
It is a perilous time. It's a perilous time not only for people who are living in Israel or the broader Middle East, but for all of us. I think we are all at a heightened risk, and we are at a very perilous moment in American history and, frankly, history for Europe and the world.
Yeah, that is Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, at one point CIA director, always a former tank commander right after West Point. Middle East about to explode as Iran and their proxies load up to attack Israel. Israel's not just standing by. We break it all down and talk about how the IDF has just taken out another Hamas leader and took him off the battlefield.
Number one. Vice President Kamala Harris has picked Minnesota Governor Tim Walz to be her running mate.
Hey, campaign, there you go. The campaign is now complete. It is Trump Vance against Harris Walz. And believe me, the people are high-fiving right now. If you listen closely to you, put your ear to the radio, you can hear them high-fiving, yes, in at Mar-a-Lago, because they are thrilled. They did not pick Josh Shapiro. Josh Shapiro's 62% approval rating in Pennsylvania. Extremely confident on his feet. Known as a moderate by most people. I can't do his unauthorized biography, but I can tell you this. You got Tim Walz, who's absolutely to the left. He is a Bernie Sanders. That doesn't even look like Bernie Sanders. He's a little bit younger. But he is left. He's center, not even center left. He is left of the left. I mean, you look at the way he has dropped the ball when the George Floyd riots happened. Look at how the federal government had to send in their national troops because he wouldn't send in his National Guard. I appreciate his military background. That's great. I understand that he's very comfortable on his feet. I don't understand a lot of his policies. School lunches for everybody? Nice thought. But if you can afford a school lunch, please don't ask the taxpayers to pay for it. If you can make one at home, that's the way I always thought, you could pay for it. That's different from kids in underserved areas, economic distressed areas who have no food. But he's gave it to everybody. So we're going to look at his record big time. And a guy right in that neighborhood whom Tim Walz was picked to woo, that is Mike Rogers, the former congressman, FBI guy, military background, sadly CNN commentator, who wants to be the next senator from Michigan, whose primary is today. Mike Rogers, welcome back. Big day for you.
Yeah, it is. It's a big day. And when you say woo, woo, who, I don't know who he's going to talk to in Michigan. This guy is so out of touch. And, you know, I'm a former law enforcement guy. Murders under him up 73%. Car thefts up 55%. Burglaries up in the high 60s. I mean, this guy's a disaster. I don't understand. I mean, I do understand.
It's a gift to Republicans. It's a gift.
I think so. And this guy openly talks about socialism and how we ought to defend going, you know, being more socialistic. I just don't, you know, listen, the average Michigan working family ain't buying it. I just talked to a woman yesterday, Brian, who sadly, and she's in a factory working, she's been there for 9 years, has a fiance. They just got news last week that they had to postpone their wedding because the caterer called and said, I can't do the food for your wedding at the price that I quoted you because of food prices.
Wow.
Have gone up so darn much. So think of this woman who's, she did it about 14 months out, thinking about getting her life together, very happy day, getting married, all of those things, bam. And that is what the Democrats have been giving people who actually get up and go to work every day. And we're ready to take that conversation to the people of Michigan while the folks up in Minnesota are, you know, giving illegals driver's license. I mean, you want to talk about out of touch. I'm looking forward to this argument, this debate, discussion.
Today's a big day for you, and I want to get to it shortly. But just to give an idea, one of the reasons why Josh Shapiro wasn't picked was the Jewish vote. He is pro-Israel. He's pro-two-state solution, which we know sadly is impractical. Palestinians don't want it. No one who spends any time in there understands why the two-state solution is really a folly, because the other side doesn't want it. So why would the Israelis go for it and continue to subscribe to it? But he is pro-Israeli, and he wrote about it. He's talked about it. And they're afraid of losing your state, Mike Rogers, if you're too pro-Israel. Correct?
Oh, absolutely. This Michigan has made a lot of important decisions. Unfortunately for the Democrats, they've all been bad. And this is one more example. So think of this. In February, cold February day in Michigan, 113,000 roughly Arab Muslims went to the polls and said uncommitted. And this is an important part of the Democrat coalition. If just 10% of them do what they say they're going to do, which is not vote, That would have been a bigger margin than Trump won Michigan in 2016. And that's just one coalition they're having problems with. So I think Waltz checks that box. So in a party, the Democrat Party, who is now all about identity politics, it's about what you look like, where you came from, not about what you're going to do. Waltz is a good pick for them. He's got, pretty sizable Muslim population in Minnesota. And so I think they think they're fixing a Michigan problem by picking a very, very liberal guy who is, listen, this is not your mother's or your grandfather's Democrat Party anymore. This is a leftist, elite, West Coast, East Coast group that doesn't care about working people anymore.
So I want you to hear what Tim Walz said at the time on the BLM riots, which started in Minneapolis.
A society that does not put equity and inclusion at the center of it is certainly going to eventually come to the places where we're at. This is a moment of inflection. It's a moment of real change. It's a moment that those folks who are out there demanding this are not going to take a commission or a report. They're going to want fundamental change. And that is what I think that's one of the exciting things in the midst of all this. You can feel a sense of optimism coming back.
So good luck with that. I don't know how that wears well, but you think we want that buzz term equity? I'd run on that if I was Mike Rogers, because I think equity, that ship has sailed.
Well, listen, the left has co-opted anything, and they're trying to redefine what inclusion means, what equity means. And we are just slowly drifting away from a merit-based system. And again, Michigan, we work for a living, Brian. We get up every day, put our kids on the bus, we go to work. Merit-based pay is an important part of that. You start taking that away from people who are working hard every day, and guess what? You want to talk about problems, they're just not going to have it. And I'm not talking about the Minnesota problems. I mean, if that's his idea of what demonstration is, by burning businesses, looting businesses, I mean, again, they are just so left and so radical. So now you have two of them. Now they're going to run ads saying, no, I don't mean these things. I just think we got to keep running ads that is their language, what they believe in, and put it out there for people to make their decision. And I think in a place like Michigan, they're going to reject this absolutely fierce liberal team.
I remember when you first started telling everybody you're running and made it official, I thought, wow, you got to wait till August. That's so late. I can't believe it's here, primary day. So
I know
you're going to lock in today. Slotkin's going to lock in today. If you look at some of the polls, she's got about a 2 to 4 point lead on you. What does the change at the top of the ticket do for your race? I know you're going to rock hard, and you know Michigan, but it's clearly Harris runs better in Michigan right now than Biden does. How do you handle that? How do you strategize against that?
Yeah, so what you're seeing now is just, listen, she fogs up a mirror. Biden could hardly do that. And so there's this excitement of, oh, my God, thank God it's not Biden. But guess what? They kind of coordinated her. She's given one speech on a teleprompter, hasn't done press conferences. She is not a great candidate, and her positions in the past just aren't known yet. When that starts happening, guess what? People are going to start coming back down to earth and go, ooh, this is tough. Michigan's always going to be a tough seat. This race we always knew was going to be close, not only for President Trump, but for, me running in the U.S. Senate seat. But what we find, Brian, and this is crazy, but not crazy, this is good, that the border, crime, illegal immigration, cost of goods and services, groceries, gasoline, all weight toward Republicans here in the state of Michigan. I mean, think of this, state of Michigan, number one issue, illegal immigration. Why? We just had another case, two cases in the last 2 weeks of illegal immigrants. One exposed himself to a 9-year-old girl. Another one raped a girl that the age has not been given, but it's well under, let's just say a minor girl. And now we find out that there are multiple cases that he was involved in sexual assaults of young girls. He was deported before the guy that exposed himself, deported 7 times. And so people are saying, wait a minute, this is not working for us. This border problem, the illegal immigrants, they're going to have to wear that. They're all stapled to the leg of Joe Biden on this policy, and they can't get away from it. So once this gets out and once we start having a conversation about the issues and not who, not what you look like or where you came from, Isn't that all exciting? It's about this woman who had to give up her wedding because of the cost of food. This is about a woman who reaches up on the conveyor belt, Brian, and picks up something, item that she can't afford anymore, but did a couple of weeks ago and puts it back in the cart. That's what this election is going to be about. And they're just wrong, wrong, and wrong. And when you look at those crime stats coming out of Minnesota, guess what? There's not a mama bear in Michigan that's going to think that's the right path for their families and the safety. You can't even have your daughter go down to the park anymore. I mean, this is crazy, and this is all self-inflicted, and we can fix it, and we will fix it.
And right now, so the primary, when do you think you'll have the tallies in? When do the polls close? 7?
Polls close at about 7, and so we'll probably know by 8:30 that, you know, we'll have a pretty good indication how it's going. And we feel pretty confident. All our polling shows we have double-digit leads, and we think we'll hold that through the night.
So I know Senator Brown does not want Kamala Harris in Ohio. Senator Tester's not even going to the DNC. He wants to hold on to that seat in Montana. What would you like from Trump?
Well, they're coming back, and I hope he continues to come back. He's right on this government intervention in our automobile industry. I mean, think of this, and he should come back and talk about it. And I think he's good for Michigan. He's right on crime. But this is the first year that that foreign auto workers produce more cars and sales in America than our domestic companies. Think of that. Never in history has it done it. Thank you, Democrats. This is the last year, first year in American history, we had to import more food than we exported. And when you talk to farmers, they point right directly at Washington, D.C. I mean, I hope Trump comes back and highlights these things because people know something's wrong. They know something's broken. Now we just have to talk about it and get them to understand, you know what, there's a fix for this, but it sure isn't going to happen if you send the same people back to D.C. to do it to you more. I hope he comes back to Michigan quite a bit. I know J.D. Vance is coming on tomorrow. You know, this is good. What is he going to talk about? We're going to highlight crime. Crime. Absolutely. We should be talking about it. They don't have answers. They believe that cops are the bad guys and criminals ought to be forgiven. And we think just the opposite. Cops are the good guys and we ought to put criminals in jail.
Right now you're fighting a ghost because you don't even really know what they stand for. You only know their records before they got the nomination. They don't really talk about it. So it's going to be interesting. Best of luck today, Mike Rogers. I'm sure you're going to be victorious. And then it's going to be a sprint to this open seat against Slotkin. Who's looking to lock up?
Yeah, it is. We're gonna get it done, Brian. For Michigan, for America, we're gonna get it done.
All right, go get him, Mike Rogers. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. I look forward to talking to you after you win. When we come back, I'll take your calls 1-866-408-7669, or you go to write me briankilmeade.com. Just click on comments.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It was a messy situation. The situation with the Taliban and the things that Donald Trump led up to it. The Afghan withdrawal was tragic, but it was a long-standing situation that rolled over many, many months and over both terms of presidents.
So that spin, if you ever heard it. By the way, Governor Tim Walz was the best surrogate for, drum roll please, Joe Biden. He said he was the perfect pick. He's at the top of his game. This guy's as sharp as ever. So he's a liar because everybody knows he wasn't, especially the vice president who's now running at the top of the ticket. So they're both covering for Joe Biden. It's amazing how quick they pivoted. Cedric Richmond, too. Cedric Richmond on the Sunday show, the morning that Joe Biden left, was out there pounding, saying that Joe Biden, now he's got my full backing. If he wants to step aside, he will, but he has no signs of doing that. He stepped aside two or three hours later. So if you were a surrogate for him, it shows you'll sell your soul in order to go to bat for somebody. Not that you disagree with. That's one thing. I have no problem with that. You like Tom Cotton gets the nomination and, you know, Tom might be too conservative for you, but he's friends of yours. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about somebody that can't serve. I'm talking about somebody that's clearly having huge cognitive problems. And you told him there was no problem there. And the only reason he's not running is because everybody knows there's problems there. The crazy thing is the explanation that Nancy Pelosi gives on how they don't speak anymore. And everybody knows Nancy Pelosi stabbed him in the back. And She tried to get out of it. I don't know why she's doing so much press if you just want to talk about it. Cut 18 with Dana Bash.
Have you spoken to President Biden since he dropped out?
No, I have not.
Do you hope to?
Yes, I hope to.
Yeah.
We're all busy.
Is everything okay with your relationship?
You'd have to ask him, but I hope so. But he knows. Look, I have loved Joe Biden, respected him for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. I think he has made one of the biggest contributions to our country in the shortest period of time of any president you can name, whether it's job creation, whether it's, well, it's the first bill to protect our bill,
COVID.
Shots in the arm, money in the pockets.
Right. Shots in the arm. No, it was the rescue package that we didn't need, that Larry Summers said, if we do that, inflation's coming, and it came. And then we got the infrastructure package where nothing's been done. And then we got the Inflation Reduction Act, which cost Joe Manchin his career and any moderate in the Senate. He stupidly went along with it, and I think he has to regret it. It's why Jim Justice is going to be the next senator from West Virginia. I guess doesn't care about that. But we all know that that was a ridiculous green energy bill. And they laughed at the fact that we thought idiotically that it was an Inflation Reduction Act. He says, oh, it was never that. Makes us look stupid, right? Tim Walz is the number two behind Kamala Harris.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
A society that does not put equity and inclusion at the center of it is certainly going to eventually come to the places where we're at. This is a moment of inflection. It's a moment of real change. It's a moment that those folks who are out there demanding this are not going to take a commission or a report. They're going to want fundamental change. And that is what I think, that's one of the exciting things in the midst of all this. You can feel a sense of optimism coming back.
So, really, that was Governor Walz right around the George Floyd riots that had a police station overrun, a city overtaken, and the place ransacked. He did almost nothing about it, and he blamed society because of it. He's a big defund the police guy, and now he is on the ticket with Kamala Harris. That's her first big decision. What do you think? Governor DeSantis, not a fan. He writes this on Twitter: most left-wing ticket in American history. Minnesota was ground zero for the BLM riots of 2020. Harris egged it on, and Walz sat by and let Minneapolis burn. Nikki Haley: Democrats doubling down on the progressive movement, a win for open borders, socialism, and Iran. And according to Jackie Heinrich, some people that she talked to on Capitol Hill, Republicans said they're relieved that it's not Kelly and it's not Shapiro, because Kelly would have delivered Arizona, and Shapiro could have delivered Pennsylvania. How does Alan West feel, who tweeted out this? We had Iran virtually bankrupt, but the Biden administration killed sanctions on them, allowing them to sell oil to China, and they're exporting their drones to Russia to use against Ukraine. All the terrorist proxies in the Middle East have their resources because of the administration-enabled peace through strength is a weakness that is enticing. Enticing to our enemies, of course. That's the other big story. It's a tinderbox in the Middle East. We're expecting Iran's retribution for the killing of Ismail Haniyeh, one of the commanders of that evil organization called Hamas. But it happened in Tehran. Alan West, welcome back.
It's good to be with you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Well, first, what do you think of this ticket?
Well, you know, this without a doubt shows us exactly where the Democrat Party is going. It's a radical far-left party, and it would have been a very interesting choice. It would have put a huge conundrum on Donald Trump and J.D. Vance if it had been a Mark Kelly, because they could have delivered Arizona. If it had been a Josh Shapiro, now you got Pennsylvania, two battleground states in play. But Tim Walz, with whom I served in Congress, he doesn't deliver anything. And remember, this is Minneapolis, Minnesota, and that state where Kamala Harris worked to raise funds to get radical Antifa members and violent protesters released from jail. So that just shows where they're headed. And so I would look at this ticket, a Harris-Walz ticket. This is going to be like George McGovern, Hubert Humphrey, Walter Mondale, and Mike Dukakis. It's going to go down in flames.
Listen, he can speak. He's comfortable in his own skin. I appreciate his 25 years plus in the National Guard. high school teacher, pretty cool background. But what he interpreted from that is, I got to make this more of a socialist state. And now I want to make it more of a socialist country. I got to give everybody school lunches. If you're up against it, you have no parents. I mean, obviously, you want a school lunch program for kids that have nothing, but not for everybody who have enough. I mean, especially it's the taxpayers' dollars.
Well, it's interesting in that he served in the National Guard, but he supposedly took an oath to the Constitution of the United States of America. But yet he is embracing a philosophy of governance, an ideology that is the complete opposite of the Constitution of the United States of America, with a progressive, socialist, leftist, Marxist ideal. And his statements on socialism, I mean, all of these things are going to come out to light. So, again, when you look at confidence in America, when you look at enthusiasm, I don't see a lot of enthusiasm right now coming from Wall Street. I don't see a lot of enthusiasm with our foreign policy, our national security policy. There's not a lot of enthusiasm for the border policies that we have right now. And Minneapolis, Minnesota is one of the hotbeds for Islamic jihadism because, let's be honest, the Somali community that is there, which is home to Ilhan Omar.
So a couple of things. We are waiting to find out what Iran's going to do. We know our guys were hitting Iraq, and we know who did it, but we haven't done anything back yet. We said we'll pick the time of their choosing. Colonel, does time matter? Doesn't time matter if you want to hit back on the people? Do you want to let them prepare and get ready? Why aren't we choosing to hit now?
Yeah, but, you know, one of the things is you should never allow your enemy to have the initiative. And I think that's what this administration has always seeded over. When you think about the countless amounts of attacks that have come from the Houthi rebels, another one of the proxies, the attacks that have come from Hezbollah, or even Hamas, Islamic Jihad, we have to, you know, once again, put them on their heels, put them on defense. And the biggest thing that we can do, as I talked about, is to, you know, get tough on the sanctions. We should not be giving them $60 to $80 billion to the number one state sponsor of Islamic terrorism. You know, the Trump administration bankrupted Iran, and you did not hear about the Houthis. You did not hear about Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, or any of these tinderbox issues. You know, Suleiman, the guy that was head of their Iranian Revolutionary Guard, the Quds Force, guess what? He was not supposed to be outside Iran. President Trump tracked him down and eliminated him. Al-Baghdadi, President Trump tracked him down and eliminated him. And so we did have that peace. We had the Abraham Accords. But now look at the chaos and confusion that we have. And you have not heard a peep from Vice President Harris on any of these issues.
Well, look, the economy's a mess. We don't know what's next. We have all these economists speaking out, using their expertise and their experience on all sides of the aisle. But we don't have any leadership from maybe the Treasury Secretary. We have all these economic experts leaving for the Kamala Harris campaign. We have a president that only works part-time and doesn't seem all there when he's there. So the question is, what should the American people think about the economy? What should they think about Eastern Europe? What should they think about the Middle East? Does anyone who's a undecided moderate look at this and say, wait a second, the foreign policy is going well? Nobody. Wait a second, the economy's going well. Wait a second, we're up a full point now in unemployment, up to 4.3. We see the numbers that are not coming down quick enough to inflation to the point where they can't lower interest rates. And in terms of the reality on the ground, this guy, Mohsen Hassan Youssef, whose dad was a co-founder of Hamas, who was jailed by the Israelis, has since come here and realized the error of the terroristic ways. He's got a book coming out, and we spoke to him a number of times. But here's what he said, which is about to happen. Cut 24.
Look, the crisis that we have right now, that we are at the verge of a regional war, is the outcome of the American administration hesitation. Iran is not, or the Islamic Republic, actually, and Ayatollah, they are not only attacking Israel. To them, America is the great Satan. They always chant death to America before they say death to Israel. So this is a strategic enemy of the United States, first of all. And in fact, Israel is fighting on behalf of the United States in that region.
He's right, isn't he?
He's totally right. And think about it. Everything that you just lined out, that's what Donald Trump should be focusing on. He should be drawing that comparative analysis between what he did, what he accomplished as president, and what is happening right now. And you got to ask yourself, you know, we're looking at an administration that has not had a cabinet meeting since last October.
It's unbelievable.
So So where is the president? Who is running this country? Where is the vice president? No one is speaking on any of these issues. And the bottom line, Brian, is who do you want to be in a room sitting across from Xi Jinping? Who do you want sitting across from Vladimir Putin or Ayatollah Khamenei or, you know, Kim Jong-un or the Islamic jihadist leadership? Who do you want to be taking that phone call, not just at 2 o'clock in the morning, but at any time of the day, to make sure that we're protecting our national security and our borders? I don't think you want Kamala Harris and Tim Walz there, but, you know, this seems like a pretty ticket. She has a nice laugh, and the media is going to do everything they can to hide her and protect her from any scrutiny and any hard questions. But the American people have to start hearing that, and that's the mission. That's the messaging. That's the number one focus for the Trump-Vance campaign going forward. That's what we're going to do here in Dallas County. We're going to talk about safety and security, better economic opportunities, better educational opportunities, as opposed to where we are today.
Right. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You leave, leave the governor of Georgia. Work that out behind the scenes. Don't bring that up.
Yes.
Because people in Georgia really like him, and you want Georgia. So you don't make them make a decision or decide not to vote for you. They've done that before, Georgia. It's a tough state to win, but it's one you have to win. Just run. I mean, the big advantage the president has is he's confident in his record. Last thought about this ticket on the left. There's no foreign policy experience. You have a guy who served in the National Guard, which is great, but that's not foreign policy experience. Why did you know, even Barack Obama realized it was bad experience, but he needed someone with experience with him. How come she didn't try to fill in her gap?
Because the evaluative criteria was not about what you and I understand as common sense and what makes sense. It was about who can come alongside with me and advance my ideological agenda. That's why you bypass someone like a Mark Kelly. That's why you bypass someone like a Governor right. Shapiro. People that have good experience and have a good domestic background and have run a state. And so you go for the ideological co-pilot.
All right. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon. Back in a moment.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, thanks so much. Stuart Varney's going to be with us in a moment. We get a chance to talk about what's happening with this election cycle. We go into Fox Business Channel. And when you watch us on the app, you just click on Watch on the bottom of the app, and then you can just see Fox News Radio. You'll see me. Now you're going to go see on FBN, Fox Business. So you'll get a chance to see a simulcast. We're also seeing on Fox Nation. We're going to be talking about what's happening with President Trump. We know it's going to be Walz and Harris together, the governor of Minnesota, together with the vice president, and they're going to think that's a winning ticket.
Here on the right-hand side of the screen, and I'll interview them about all kinds of things. Here we go. It's 10:51. Appear, please. Thank you. Kill me. Brian, Kamala Harris has chosen Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate. Sources tell Fox Harris didn't pick Josh Shapiro because she was concerned that his personal ambitions would upstage her. What do you make of that, Brian?
Well, number one, how terrible of the camp to leak that out. Not only do you not pick him, but you tar him. First right. off, you don't get to be governor of a state and not have ambition. He's mentored by Barack Obama, so he's on the path. He wants to be president. So if that's the truth, to leak that out is so unprofessional and classless, but it's everywhere. I just saw that. Evidently, he cut a tape over the weekend, kind of pitching himself as the VP. I don't know. When J.D. Vance was asked by our own Lawrence Jones, "Do you want it? How would you feel if you don't get it?" He goes, "I would be disappointed." Is he too ambitious? So you don't pick Governor Shapiro, and now you want to diminish him as a governor. Okay, good luck with that. Maybe you want to walk that back and define it. Now, Tim Walz definitely wanted it. He's got great personality. I appreciate his National Guard experience. But if you look at what he stood for, what he stands for, what he's proud of, most of the stuff Bernie Sanders would be high-fiving on.
Exactly.
So if you're happy with that, this is your ticket. But we've always been told in going to school on this stuff since the 60s, you try to balance out your ticket. If you're a little old, you try to get somebody young. If you're a little moderate, you try to get someone more conservative. If you have someone like George W. Bush, you want to get someone that makes the old school Republicans feel good. That means Dick Cheney. You know, that's we always saw Joe Biden with his foreign policy experience to balance out young Barack Obama. This doesn't balance. This reinforces what I thought Kamala Harris was, but I'm not really sure what she is. If you go to her website, it says nothing on her platform. She doesn't give interviews. Surrogates say she's changed about 12 policies. So this is really a lot of question marks.
Look, look at the other side of the coin. The Harris campaign is trying to say Trump is low energy. They use this comparison of schedules. That's what they call low energy. How could anyone call Trump low energy, Brian?
Hadn't been done before, but, you know, he only has Montana on Friday, and they're barnstorming the country because she just picked a running mate. Look, Trump's, this is his third rodeo. This guy was on the road even during the pandemic and getting criticized for it. So, and even in 2022, he was doing rallies. 2021, he did a rally. So I don't think that his appearances will be an issue. What he's doing, too, is he's meeting with people every day. He's doing interviews almost every day. He did one yesterday with a streamer. The other day, he did Maria, did Laura Ingraham. So, I mean, he's doing, was on with us on our radio show 2 weeks ago, did Sean Hannity. So he's getting to millions of people, let alone the clips the other networks are running. What is Kamala Harris doing? When you see her, she reads the prompter and she leaves.
Yeah. Look, is Trump joined, as you say, the conservative streamer Aidan Ross on his live stream yesterday. Listen to what Trump had to say about Harris. Roll it.
She hasn't done one interview. You know, she's not doing any interviews.
Yeah.
Because if she did one interview where a hard question's asked, she's incapable of answering it.
The youth vote. By appearing with young creators on TikTok. That's a strategy, right?
It is. He's disappointing me, but I understand it. He's on TikTok. I'm dead set against it. China's loving it. All the followers, they get their information too. So I hope we go back to banning it. But he's going, look, I like young people. He actually danced.
He's very good at using technology, you know?
Yeah.
That's Donald Trump. In 2016, he effectively used Twitter. Now he's not above using TikTok.
But for Stuart, something else you'd appreciate. Where was he last week? He was in Nashville. He was meeting with a Bitcoin conference, cryptocurrency, and he's open to it. In the beginning, he says it's kind of weird, just like Jamie Dimon was saying. But now he's saying, "Let me figure this out. What are you guys doing? What are you up to? What are your goals? Let me go to the conference and find out about it." And that's one advantage of J.D. Vance. He knows AI. He also knows crypto. So he's 78 years old. But he's so open to other things. Why? Because he likes young people. What was he doing with his free time? Bryson DeChambeau says, I got a YouTube show. You want to come
that's
on?
That's right. That was great
I'll go
stuff,
do it.
Too. It was great stuff. Hey, Brian, we're out of time. That was good stuff. All Mr. Right. Kilmeade, we'll see you again real soon.
See you in the hall, Stuart.
Yeah, we always do.
Thanks so much. Elevator. James, listen on KCRS in Odessa. Hey, James.
Hey, Brian. I'd really like your thoughts. You know, this used to not be any kind of issue that we would put 2 cents on, but we have to today. I just can't get a feel for what's more important, satisfying the electorate that is all about identity politics or satisfying the electorate that's about what's right for the country. I honestly don't know how to weigh that out at this point.
Well, no, I think you're going to vote on it. You're going to vote on it. And they're almost afraid to say it now. In the beginning, it was the new Green Deal. We don't want it. We're not the technology's not ready for it. We're going to do it anyway. We're just going to print a bunch of money. We're going to put it in the system. We're going to go spend it. Not effectively, not efficiently. We're not going to get the results we want, but we're going to go spend it. That's doing something that's politically correct that you think is going to save the planet, air quotes. But if you do things that are practical for the country, you seal the border, you make sure 99 terrorists on the FBI watch list don't get in. You make sure 80,000 unaccompanied minors aren't lost somewhere in our nation. Can't find 80,000 kids. Do you believe this? I mean, all this stuff, you make sure our defense is built up so we can help fight two. We can fight two wars at one time, which we might have to do and we can't right now. So we don't have the military industrial base. All these things I said shouldn't be Republican or Democrat. Should be just for the country. I think the American people want what you want. And that says do things right for the country, not right for parties, Republicans or Democrats. That's what Trump's doing. And Trump's letting the Republican Party catch up to him. In the beginning, they were reluctant. Now they're just asking him, what's next? And he's going, tariffs are next. A missile shield is next. Oh, we're not taxing tips.
From highest atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. As usual, a lot of people take off this week in the summer because not much goes on. They were mistaken. A lot's going on. We'll give you the big stories. Charles Gasparino will break down what's happening in the economy. He's got a brand new book called Go Woke, Go Broke. Man, is that appropriate? And that wouldn't have been the case 3 years ago. A lot of people think, well, you know, if you want to be successful, you got to go woke. Now people have realized the folly of that statement. David Avello with us now, chairman of GOPAC. And, of course, we're watching what's happening with the tinderbox in the Middle East, which we're looking for Iran through their proxies and through directly to attack Israel at some point. And I think they're ready, as much as you can be, when you're hit by three to four sides. And then we're also looking at what's going on with the economy. It's somewhat stable today, but, man, what an epically bad day yesterday. And we wonder where the economy is going globally because people are waiting on us. And, of course, the big story is, when will Kamala Harris name a running mate? The answer is now. And the winner is Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota. Here to talk about it is the chairman of GOPAC, David Avella. David, a lot of Republicans feared Mark Kelly because he's an astronaut, military guy, Arizona battleground state. He won two tough elections. A lot of Republicans feel Governor Shapiro because of 60% approval rating. And he's very well liked in Pennsylvania, a state that Trump is holding on to a slim lead in. How do Republicans view the governor of Minnesota?
He is in complete alignment with Kamala Harris and follows the trend, particularly on the Democratic side of recent history, that they don't seek to put someone on the ticket that helps them reach the middle. They seek to reinforce their base. Joe Biden wasn't about expanding the map. Tim Kaine for Hillary Clinton wasn't about expanding the map. Joe Lieberman wasn't about expanding the map. It was about keeping the base happy. And that is ultimately what Tim Walz does for Kamala Harris. I mean, you look at his record, Brian, and it is one of the most progressive. I mean, progressives thirst nationally over the type of stuff that Tim Walz has done in Minnesota.
So, yeah, well, and we'll see. Nobody thinks it's a Republican state, although Trump was closing in on it up until the switch on who's at the top of the ticket. And he always felt in 2016, a couple more visits, he would have had it. So Walz is relatively popular in Minnesota, but the main time we remember hearing about him is during the BLM riots, where he was MIA. In fact, many people think supporting them. Listen to his comments then.
A society that does not put equity and inclusion at the center of it is certainly going to eventually come to the places where we're at. This is a moment of inflection. It's a moment of real change. It's a moment that those folks who are out there demanding this are not going to take a commission or a report. They're going to want fundamental change. And that is what I think that's one of the exciting things in the midst of all this. You can feel a sense of optimism coming back.
So that was after the BLM riots had calmed down, but they spread gradually across the country. President Trump wanted to make clear that it was him who sent the National Guard in because he did nothing. And, of course, he did not back them. The mayor at the time, too. Do you think that stuff comes up again?
It will, because you think about the fact that his comments right there fall completely in line with the fact that while many states have seen their crime rates go down, Minnesota is one of the states where crime rates have gone up at a time when particularly independent and Republican voters are concerned about the undocumented workers or undocumented folks coming into this country. He was for giving them driver's license. It's in every area that you see he plays to the most progressive ideas, and the results are there in Minnesota. Crime is up. Immigration continues to be an issue for them. And think about the whole budget disaster up there. I mean, he was given a $17.6 billion surplus. Brian, he spent it all and went to the legislature and said, we need to raise taxes. Those are not ideas that are going to play well in states like Arizona and Pennsylvania, all the states that Republicans were concerned if Kelly or Shapiro would make it a more competitive state. The reality is Walz makes it harder for Democrats to win those swing states.
So two sources familiar confirm on background. The deciding factor for the VP's choice was that Senator Fetterman said publicly concerns Shapiro's own personal ambitions will cause him to upstage and override Harris. The video Shapiro produced with Philly Mayor Sherelle Parker's team solidified this sentiment on Friday, which he quickly pulled down. So that could be the case. The other part is the fact that he's Jewish. And the fact is that they have hopes of taking Michigan. They're losing Michigan because of their to a degree, Joe Biden is pro-Israel. Your thoughts on both those factors?
But Kamala Harris isn't going to lose Pennsylvania or Minnesota or Wisconsin because she picked a VP based off their religious affiliation. She's going to lose them because she embodies Joe Biden's policies, which is why this administration is at a 36% approval rating. The overwhelming majority of Americans disagree with the direction they're trying to take the country. As Republicans, we need to make sure that not only do Americans understand that Kamala Harris was right beside Joe Biden in making these bad policy decisions, she's doubled down with Tim Walz, who also shares all these really bad ideas for making our country more successful. It will, in fact, make us go backwards.
So I want you to hear. So we have the tickets, and they're both said. J.D. Vance is going to follow the ticket around the country. There's going to 4 or 5 stop. The former president's only going to Montana on Friday right now. We'll see if he schedules anything over the weekend. He's doing some influencer things and some streamers with some younger people. But listen to Michelle Price. Republicans are frustrated because of the honeymoon, the lack of questioning, the lack of scrutiny, and the suddenly transformation of a widespread, thought to be inadequate vice president is now the dream candidate as a presidential candidate who's never won a primary, who's never gotten a single vote, never got to a primary. Here's Michelle Price of the Associated Press, Cut 29.
That everything that has been in this honeymoon period might seem kind of silly compared to when people are looking at their 401ks or when they're going to start looking at gas prices or they're looking at what it costs at the grocery store, that the hype that is kind of coming back down to earth, mm-hmm. we might be entering that phase that the Trump campaign has been waiting for.
Do you think they're entering that phase yet, or do you think it comes after the DNC?
After the convention, she will get another bounce, 1 or 2 points coming out of the convention, if history is any indication, Brian. All that to say, if we calmly and factually point out where Kamala Harris really wants us to take this country, that it is a continuation of Joe Biden's policies, we're setting ourselves up for a McGovern or even Dukakis-type year. Keep in mind, in both of those cases, Dukakis was up 18 points, Brian, 18 points with 5 months to go. And Republicans went out and made the case for how his ideas were backwards, just like we're seeing with Kamala Harris. We could see a situation where then Dukakis ended up losing by 9. Kamala Harris could lose by 9. And even if she doesn't nationally lose by 9, it's about those 4 or 5 key states that we keep talking about. What happens in Pennsylvania? What happens in Michigan? What happens in Wisconsin? What happens in Arizona? What happens in Georgia? We win 3 or 4 of those states, depending upon which ones we win. Trump is in the White House. Her path is very narrow. She's got to win Pennsylvania. She's got to win Michigan. She can't win those states. She can't hold the White House.
So here's Kamala Harris talking about the economy. Cut 27.
And we are very proud of Bidenomics. And as today's jobs numbers make clear, Bidenomics is working. Bidenomics is working. Trump's economic plans going forward would raise inflation and send us into a recession by 2025.
However, it's their job numbers that are going up. It is the stock market that's going down, and we don't have anybody even talking about it. We have another economic advisor going to the Kamala Harris camp and leaving the White House. I don't know who's in charge.
It's hard to know. I mean, you think about President Biden, the inflation rate is 20.1%. So they may try to make the case that Bidenomics has helped raise wages. But the other numbers prove just the opposite, which is the jobless rate continues to tick up. you may be getting that pay raise, you may be making more money, but you're ultimately just turning it over to pay for gasoline, for electricity, for food. I mean, you think about it, gas is up 50% since the Biden administration started. Electricity is up 31%. Food's up 20%. Where in that those numbers does it seem like the economy is moving in the right direction, or that inflation somehow would be worse under a different? How can it be any worse, Brian?
So we're talking to David Avella, chairman of GOPAC. So, David, what's your ground game like? I'm hearing differing things about, you know, what was left in place by Ronald McDaniel, what is being done now. I know people are concerned about election integrity, but why is it a choice, election integrity or a ground game? Are you concerned at all? What areas are you the strongest? Where are you the weakest?
Let's go strongest. You have an RNC that's focused on making sure the ballot process is followed, that lawsuits where traditionally fraud has had the potential or rules maybe weren't always followed. So you've got the legal side that the RNC is working on. And then you also have them focused on those core base groups, whether those be individuals who care strongly about the Second Amendment, whether you are voters that are concerned about the life issue. Republicans are working to make sure those voters are turned out. They're also working to turn out economic conservatives who are worried about the tax increases that Kamala Harris has already said she's going to pass by not extending the bipartisan tax cuts that happened during the Trump administration. The turnout issues that we have to be concerned about is making sure that independents, who are the most persuadable, and that, let's not forget, will ultimately decide this election in the swing states, they've got to know where our positions are and that how we're going to make them better, make life better, and that then we turn them out. But they got to hear our message first, and that's where the paid advertising is going to be so important, because you're not going to hear it from a lot of mainstream media sources.
Little shocked to not see any Trump ads during the Olympics, were you?
You're already seeing an ad today, Brian, of the Trump campaigns on the air talking about Tim Walz. They are very targeted and smart. They know who they need to talk to. They are focusing their ads. The Olympics, whether they're advertising or there, clearly they don't see that as being a demographic that is key for them. But they are, you know, money is not going to be the issue. They're going to make sure they get their message to those who need to hear it.
Let's see. Let's hope, because strategy is everything when it's going to be 1 or 2 points in a lot of these states. David Avella, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, we'll take your calls. Then bottom of the hour, Charlie Gasparino. He's got a brand new book, author of Go Woke, Go Broke. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
It tells the strength of this movement, because they put millions against us. Millions. If we were so effective, and if people didn't like our message, if people didn't like this movement, this pro-democracy, pro-diplomacy, pro-peace, pro-humanity, pro-love, pro-hope, anti-war movement. If people didn't like it, then they wouldn't have to spend so much money trying to shut it down.
Well, that is squad member Corey Bush. Hi, everyone. We're doing more to know now. She faces the pro-Israeli prosecutor, she says, that says, you know what, I'm a Democrat. She's been embarrassing us since she's been in office. She's coming out and still wants to defund the police every day, is pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, and she's about to be defeated handily tonight. This will be the second major squatter that is now gone. You got Jamal Bowman also gone. Corey Bush would be next. A lot of them are getting scares, abandoning each other. Why? Because far left doesn't work. And I'm not saying that. James Carville is another one that said that. Anyone who goes along with the squad because they have a good media presence will find themselves up in flames. No doubt about it. Next, Olympic scoring big ratings. 32.6 million average viewers, up 77% since 2021. Those are the pandemic games delayed a year. That number includes the airings on NBC, Peacock, USA, E, CNBC, Paris Extra 1, Paris Extra 2, and additional NBCU digital platforms. I don't even know what half these are. The U.S. men's basketball team, by the way, had a 13. They beat Puerto Rico on Saturday in the afternoon, airing on NBC Peacock. Congratulations to them. Simone Biles in the middle of controversy, hitting back at criticism from an NFL star, Marlon Humphrey, after he said the gymnast was disgusting for bowing to Rebeca Andrade of Brazil. Well, he did it because Rebeca had a bunch of knee surgeries, ACL tears, finally got healthy, felt like she had the best floor routine in the entire Olympics, and gave her respect. And she says this, "We've always going to keep a good face and support our competitors because they work just as hard as we do. You have to give them their flowers." And that's exactly what me and Jordan were doing. Jordan is her teammate. I think that Simone Biles is right. Next. Taxpayers expected to save millions after the COVID-era perks for illegal immigrants gets canceled. ICE ended a COVID-era program that granted hundreds of free minutes of video calls to illegal immigrants, a move that is estimated to save us $10 million a year. Why was it even in place? The White House Department of Energy announced new efforts to strengthen our electric grid. Good idea. Take your time. No rush. AI is just overcoming it. And, of course, you got to admit that green energy doesn't work. It's not ready yet anyway. Google lost a massive antitrust lawsuit over its search dominance. After having carefully considered and weighed the witnesses and testimony and evidence, the court reaches the following conclusion. Google is a monopoly and has acted as one to maintain its monopoly, that into your U.S. District Court. So what does that mean, Allison? You're a lawyer, you went to law school. Google is a monopoly, but they can't. It's okay to be powerful. You can't just destroy everybody just because they want in on your business.
And I know a lot of the times, I don't know the details of the suit in particular, but just it's also them pressuring the others as well. I mean, they got to be a little bit more careful with all the search issues lately, which they are quick. They're quicker to correct now than they have been in the past. But, you know, people are always going to be going after them.
Yeah, but the problem is they're a bunch of wild lefties. Google's exclusive deals with Apple and other key players in the mobile ecosystem were anti-competitive. Google has also charged high prices in search advertising and reflects its monopoly power. No doubt about it. I wonder how that's affecting the stock today. What else can we tell you? Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson are married and they live in Los Angeles. And in the daylight, their home was burglarized. This is just a few weeks ago, the thieves smashing through glass to get inside the guest house on their property. This is unbelievable. You shouldn't be allowed to steal from famous people. You've always said that.
Yes, everyone else is fair game, but if you're famous, hands off. But right. Was it in their real house or just their guest house?
It says guest house. It could have gone further, but in the middle of the day, you've got to really be desperate to go into a guy's house that's famous. You know they got alarms and cameras everywhere. Is it worth it?
You're assuming the burglars knew that was right. The Hanks' residence?
Oh, you're saying that they didn't do their research?
I'm saying they probably just thought this is a really nice, expensive house in a bougie neighborhood, and there's probably
well,
some good
they're
stuff.
They're going to go, do you know think they said to each other, look, that's one of the stars of Bosom Buddies. We should go into his house.
I'm sure that was the conversation in the car.
All right, listen, keep it here. We come back. Charles Gasparino is going to be with us. Brand new book out. We're going to find out what's going on in the economy. Yes, your wallet. Don't move.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We have to stay active. And, you know, we have to stay woke. Like, everybody needs to be woke. and you can talk about if you're the wokest or woker, but just stay more woke than less woke.
Yeah. All right, that was Kamala Harris a little while ago talking about going woke. You got to go woke. And while she was doing that, giggling, of course, the two anchors just staring at her, wondering what she's laughing at. That is par for the course until we had this instant makeover in this sprint in this 90 days dating thing we're doing with somebody that wouldn't answer any questions. But I digress. With me in studio, if you're watching the stream, Charlie Gasparino, author of a brand new book out today. Don't blame yourself if you haven't seen it. It just came out. Go Woke, Go Broke. Charlie is a great journalist, senior correspondent for Fox Business, New York Post columnist. Charlie, great to see you again.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So now I love this too, because in the real world, there was a while when being woke was cool. A brief moment where people like shows you cutting edge.
Kind of and then slept. I think we both slept through that. But the cool part.
But then it just totally boomeranged. When did you realize this had more negative than positive connotation?
Well, I mean, I think it reached its sort of high point or low point, however you want to put it, in 2020, where after George Floyd, you just saw the corporate America's response to what is essentially, you know, a single case of a police officer possibly brutalizing an innocent person. There are debates about George Floyd these days. We don't have to get into all that. But every CEO in America in a major public company came out and basically held a candlelight vigil for this individual who they didn't know. And they ramped up sensitivity training over something that happened in Minneapolis.
Huge donations to build BLM.
Huge donations to Black Lives Matter. You know, you sat through critical race theory seminars at these various big companies like American Express, which
they told us to read the 1619 Project.
Yes, read that. But it went beyond that. It went to DEI on steroids. I quote a Bloomberg story in here, which I've also anecdotally confirmed that in that time after 2020, for about the next year and a half, like something like 90% of the hiring of S&P 500 companies was non-white male. I mean, that's insane. I mean, that's right. Discrimination, and you can say a lot of things about, but that's where we were. Jamie Dimon coming out, you know, visiting a branch in the summer of 2020, taking a knee. ESG just imposed upon
ESG
companies.
Means?
Environmental, social, governance, investing. That means if you're a big asset management like BlackRock, you go to the portfolio companies that you hold. Remember, they're asset managers, right? And you say you have
designed to get a profit for the client.
Forget about that. You have to do this, 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 and this. You have to cut back your carbon footprint. You got to hire 50%. You know, your board has to be 50% non-white males. Down the line. By the way, that ESG stuff does not apply to Chinese companies.
Do you think they care?
They can pollute. They can discriminate against the Uyghurs. They can, you know, murder the Uyghurs, put them in concentration camps, and, you know, ESG doesn't apply to that. So I saw this spectacle in 2020, and then it kept going. And then I noticed in 2023 the backlash, and it occurred kind of simultaneously. I'm writing the book. I was going to do a book about Silicon Valley Bank. That's one of the first regional banks that imploded in the regional banking crisis. And I was going to write a book of saying, hey, you know, this is interesting. This thing imploded. These guys, you know, didn't have a lot of good risk controls, but they were also incredibly woke. They were like going nuts on ESG, on DEI, holding all these seminars when they should have been watching the balance sheet. That was the initial impetus of the book. And then I realized, whoa, right after as that happened, Budweiser puts a trans woman influencer as
Dylan Mulvaney.
As a, you know, in an ad, essentially in an ad. I mean, this is a company that, you know, appeals to middle America, you know, appeals to, I mean, we've grown up on Budweiser ads, Bud's McKenzie, you name it, that you know, somehow thought it was a smart thing to put not just any trans influencer, someone that's a very political. Dylan Mulvaney, we should point out, is very political. She was interviewed. She interviewed Joe Biden. She chronicled her 365 days of girlhood on TikTok. I mean, this is someone that's, you know, in the business of promoting a political aspect of her lifestyle. And, you know, I have no problem with people, with transgender people. That's fine. Do what you want. But when you politicize it, it becomes an issue. And I think the Budweiser ad pointed to that politicization. On top of that, you had Target at the same time causing this huge uproar during Pride Month where they mixed Pride children's clothing with tuck-friendly bathing suits. And, you know, these were huge displays. And then people were like, you know, you go to Target, you generally go there to get cheap, you know, inexpensive clothes. You bring your kids and you're bringing your kids into something that a lot of people didn't want to bring their kids to. Disney is a huge part of the book. They, you know, Ron DeSantis is a very popular governor in Florida. The legislature is popularly elected. The governor and the legislature came together and said, we want to pass a bill that essentially says you can't teach sex ed to toddlers. The people, that was a very popular bill in Florida, you know, generally. Yeah. Disney thought, no, because we are a woke company, we're going to oppose this and we're going to use our lobbying might because they're big in Florida to try to reverse that. And they went to war with DeSantis, who, if you read the book, you'll understand he won in the end.
No, he won. But here's what's interesting. It's the employees that pushed the management to do it. The CEO loses his job because he responded to it.
Well, here's the thing. Since you go in there, I'll give you a little bit from the book. Bob Chapek was the CEO at the time. He took over from a guy named Bob Iger, who is back at CEO. Bob Iger is one of the most woke CEOs around. Chapek came in and wanted to change things. I mean, the way someone described it to me, if Bob Iger wanted, and it's in the book, three same-sex kissing scenes in a cartoon, you know, Chapek wanted to cut it down to one. He wanted to move the company back in the center. He initially refrained from opposing the Florida law despite a backlash and despite Iger urging him in a tweet to oppose it. He initially refrained. Then the backlash came from the company, and he overcorrected in wokeness so much that he earned the ire of both his employees, who thought it was horrible that he refrained, and then he earned the ire of the people of Florida. And by the way, the public, who started boycotting some of the movies. So I go in through all those machinations in the book. It's an interesting story. You know, Brian, what I think the book does, and it's almost comical, these guys stepping on each other for wokeness. But I tried to be serious in the sense that, you know, there is an economic impact. You know, when companies are devoting so much time to politicization,
right,
and left-wing politicization, they're not serving their employees, not serving their shareholders.
Absolutely. So you also point out some heroes in this, people, yes, that stood up and pushed back.
Absolutely.
Ed Renzi, the retired CEO of McDonald's, and Bernie Marcus, the founder of Home Depot.
Yes. Great Americans. And, you know, Ed Renzi took on the wokesters in a sense that he was sitting home watching Bob Chapek. He didn't know the backstory. He will it. And when he reads the book, watching Bob Chapek go off on DeSantis and said, why is he doing this? Why is he wasting taxpayer money? You know, what was interesting about Renzi is he's a real social justice warrior in the true sense. And I go through his background at McDonald's. McDonald's was a place run by Ray Kroc, was the CEO. Ed was the CEO of America's for a long period of time. You should know that Ed Renzi helped create the Chicken McNuggets. That's his contribution to world health.
Great idea.
World health. So
fantastic. Oh, parents everywhere.
Right. So, yeah. But, you know, they wanted to bring McDonald's. They made a huge push to bring McDonald's not only in minority communities, right, but have them owned by people from the communities, expand black ownership of McDonald's franchises. And that's what he did. And, you know, so this is a guy that's not some heartless capitalist. Yeah. He's like, but this, what was going on post-2020, and it started actually before that, as the book points out, was something worse. It was wokeness on steroids.
And guess who agrees with you? James Carville. Tell me if you think these get you guys cross paths in your beliefs and what you found. Cut 13.
Understand this, and I'm going to say this as clearly as I can. Anybody that has ever listened to anything that the progressive left has ever said has lived to profoundly regret it. I'm literally on every issue, they're dead ass wrong. These people are not just wrong, they're literally walking catastrophes. And the fastest people realize that, the better off they're going to be. I wish she'd tell them all to go f*** themselves.
So, I mean, that's pretty much these are all left-wing policies.
Well, you know, the last part of the book is called Woke is Broken. And I spent a lot of time with Larry Fink of BlackRock, which was one of the biggest sort of purveyors of ESG investing.
Yeah.
He's considered the wokest CEO in America, who has deep regrets about going there. And if you read the book, you'll find out why. I mean, how it hurt his business. Bob Iger, now back at Disney, has deep regrets going there. He's trying to go back into the middle. Target toned down all its pride celebrations. Budweiser is going so non-woke after featuring a trans woman in a beer ad that it's now in sponsorship partnership with the UFC, with Dana White. They even go so far, Dana White, I did interview him about this, they're going so far as to possibly sponsor his other
slap.
Yeah, his other very non-woke sport called Power Slap.
Yeah, Power Slap.
Two guys. I mean, you can't get anything more.
I know. It's on Fox Nation, too. I mean,
I'm scared of it. I watch it. I'm scared.
I know. He says it's going to be bigger than UFC.
He told me that too. But I'm just saying that. I mean, so think about it. You go from Dylan Mulvaney giggling in a bubble bath with a beer can to power slap.
But to Budweiser's credit, UFC, they were there first, and they kind of went to a note like Modelo. And then when Dana White heard this story about what they went through because of one marketing decision that somebody made, he's like, you know what? I'm going back. I cannot believe how they got screwed.
Okay, he talked
to Kid Rock.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, set the record straight, because I told Dana this. It's more than just one marketing person. If you go, see, Anheuser-Busch is not owned by Anheuser. Budweiser is not owned by Anheuser-Busch. It's owned by AB InBev, which is a big company, very woke, big Davos-oriented company run by a guy named Michel Doukeris. Everybody thinks Brendan Whitworth runs it. No, Michel Doukeris is Brendan Whitworth's boss. And when I told Dana, I said, this is a very woke company. They impose DEI standards. One of the reasons why that marketing executive, who I believe got held out to dry in a lot of ways because she was following a broader corporate edict for DEI in the influencers, one of the reasons why she went there, because they were under pressure to DEI the influencers. So if you're going to go there, if you're going to, you know, bring gender identity into the influencer category, well, guess what? There's, you know, Dylan Mulvaney is at the top of your list because she's one of the most famous transgender influencers. I mean, it is what it is. So that's how they got there. Right. And it's not just one woke. I told Dana this and he goes, well, I don't know anybody at ABM. I deal with Brendan Whitworth. And I said, well, I'm just telling you who he reports to.
So Charlie Gasparino's got this great book, Go Woke, Go Broke. We're going to talk to him a little bit about the economy when we come back and more on this. Including what Kamala Harris has said in the past, and should we be worried? You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And we are very proud of Bidenomics. And as today's jobs numbers make clear, Bidenomics is working. Bidenomics. And Bidenomics is working.
Trump's economic plans going forward would raise inflation and send us into a recession by 2025.
We're here with Gary Gasparino, author of Go Woke,
Go
Broke.
Did you call me Gary Gensler?
I almost did. Charlie Gasparino. Charlie, I'm looking.
Please.
I know. I'm looking at some of these statements that she made. Listen to what Kamala Harris said too in 2019. Cut five.
I think there has to be some form of reparations, and we can discuss what that is. But look, we're looking at more than 200 years of slavery. We're looking at almost 100 years of Jim Crow. We're looking at legalized segregation and in fact, segregation on so many levels that exist today.
So
based on race.
It depends on who she's sitting with. She just goes along. Are we really, as a country, ready to go through reparations, which you weren't going to do, which Lincoln didn't want to do in 1865?
Right. Listen, the Biden administration is corporate wokeness on steroids as well. And if you want to know where the companies get their cues from, why Jamie Dimon went so far out on the social activist wing, why Larry Fink did, a lot of the stuff they did was a reaction to what was being parroted in Washington and the imperative that was handed down from the Biden administration. And let's be
real. You're saying they would have done it if Trump was in office?
I think they wouldn't have gone as far, probably, if Trump was in office. Although, who knows? The die was cast as soon as they started going there. And as the book shows, this didn't happen overnight. This was a progression towards wokeness. But, you know, listen, if you think about the Biden administration, it essentially parrots the worst of corporate wokeness. Don't drill for oil. Regulations that force businesses to do certain things like, you know, invest in windmills and inefficient
regulations forms of, totally underappreciated.
Yeah, I mean, just it goes, you go down and, you know, DEI. I mean, listen, we're all in favor of diversity. I am, you are, I know it. But, you know, DEI takes it to another level. Joe Biden did this incredible disservice to Kamala Harris to Kenji Brown Jackson.
He keeps doing it, too. Yeah. First black Supreme Court justice. Just say first Supreme Court justice.
I know, but to every African-American he appoints to a high-level position, he says they got there. He says because they're black. He doesn't say – I mean, it's so stupid, and it degrades their ability. I mean, he came out and said DEI – is, you know, throughout my administration, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but not much. And it starts at the top with the vice president. I mean, what the hell is that?
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure she was happy about hearing that.
Well, just for the people at home listening right now, they want to know about their 401k, the pensions, and nervous about what happened Monday and Friday. Your thoughts?
Well, listen, I'm not going to tell you to sell everything. I mean, if you made some money, you can take a little bit off the table. That's fine. I will tell you this, though. The markets are reacting to tremors. What Main Street, what the average people have felt for the last 3 years, and the reason why Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's approval ratings on the economy are so lousy, is that they knew the economy wasn't that great. They knew that, you know, there were jobs out there, yes, but inflation was eating through their wages. They had problems taking their family to Applebee's on a Friday. I mean, it was hard to make ends meet. Okay, those numbers became apparent now. You can't hide them anymore with the latest jobs report and other statistics that came out right before that. The market reacted to that. Now, does that mean we're heading for Armageddon? Donald Trump put out the, you know, Great Depression is coming, this and that. I don't think so. But listen, there's something to watch. I mean, the markets are signaling economic slowdown and recession. They're signaling.
And what does it mean for rates?
Oh, rates are going down. But you know, it's a much more complicated situation because rates can go down. But if you keep borrowing, well, guess what happens? Loan rates go up.
Just make sure you have enough money to go get Charlie's book, Go Woke, Go Broke. Yep. Charlie, thanks so much.
Anytime.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.